Welcome to the QAV podcast. My name is Cameron. This is a weekly investing podcast where I chat with my friend Tony. Tony's a very successful investor. He's been doing it for about 30 years. His returns on average are about double the market over that period of time. And he's able to get those returns because he developed a system of value investing that we call QAV, quality at value. How do you find good quality companies and how do you buy them at a discount to their intrinsic value? It's basically a scoring system. We look at the fundamentals of the companies, and that's what we teach our club members. In terms of the podcast, we have a free episode each week, goes for about half an hour. That's what you're listening to now. We have a longer episode, usually goes for an hour to an hour and a half. And I'll tell you more about that at the end of the episode. Anyway, let's get into this week's show. Welcome to QAV 712, 19th of March, 2024. Has the RBA met yet, TK? Are you keeping an eye on the RBA? I know you love the RBA. RBA fan number one. Don't you?
Yeah, I've got the binoculars out on the patio looking down at the Martin Place. Waiting for the grey smoke or the black smoke or the white smoke to come
out of the chimney.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Jump on my high-speed internet connection and sell everything or buy everything.
No, hold on.
It's usually 2:30 we get the news when they break.
Well, isn't it? What time is it there now? Oh, it's only 1:45. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
but yes, they aren't meeting today. Yeah. Like everyone expects them to stay on hold.
Yeah.
Well, we know they do nothing. certainly in terms of contribution to the economy, they do nothing, but anyway.
Well, the market's had a choppy week, Tony, yet again. It was recovering last week and then decided, recovered enough. Time to de-recover. Was it Friday? I think it took a big hit and then recovered a little bit and then just been sort of muddling along ever since then. Nothing really exciting, but ABB. Wow. Did you see what happened to ABB last week? Origin sort of abruptly cancelled their, I think it was like a white label agreement. Origin Energy will terminate the white label wholesale agreement with ABB effective 12th of April 2024. In FY24, the Origin white label wholesale agreement is expected to contribute an estimated 14 million EBITDA. Under Origin's most recent Layer 3 wholesale proposal, Origin would have contributed an estimated 10 million EBITDA in the first year on current volumes with declining EBITDA margin percentage in future years. Anyway, they all of a sudden said, nah. And the share price dropped 20% in a day. It was kind of brutal.
Yeah, a big ricochet because they're still, I noticed further on in that article that Aussie Broadband reaffirms its upgraded FY24 guidance.
Mm.
So they haven't backed out that loss in their guidance yet, and they've reaffirmed it. So, which means that they have noticed it's happened, obviously. So, surprising the market cut it down like that.
We do hold it in one of the light portfolios, bought it back in August, and it was doing okay. Now it's back to zero, but still adds 1% actually.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Look, it was a good company on the buy list a little while ago. I mean, if you had said to me, Before you bought this stock, should I buy it because they're doing this deal with Origin Energy Retail Limited? I would have said, yes, not going to make any difference. I mean, who's going to buy mobile telephony from an electricity gas company? I've never understood. I know they like to think they can bundle up products and sell them to their customer bases. And I guess if you gave the mobile broadband away free, it's a good marketing offer. But it just, in my 40 years of watching these things and being in business, they've never worked. Very rarely work. Can't think of a case where it's kind of a bundled product works.
It's just people, the brand loyalty, Tony, that people have for their electricity company, the love for the brand is what it's all about. You can't beat the brand. Speaking of internet, I was, you know, I used the ChatGPT, Tony. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that. I used the ChatGPT, and it's got the it's got the voice thing now where you can talk to it. So I do that a lot, particularly with foxes around, and we're asking it things, and it's been a bit laggy, a little bit choppy, the voice. And so I downloaded an app to test my network, and it came back and told me that I had one of the lowest Wi-Fi internet speeds and NBN speeds in Brisbane, like lowest 25%. And then it told me who the best one was. And I went onto Reddit and looked it up, and everyone was like raving about this company. So there's a company called Launtel out of Launceston, L-A-U-N-T-E-L. I was with Internode, which has now been sold to, I don't know, one of the others. I went onto Launtel, had a look at their deals, upgraded. Within 10 minutes, they'd switched me over. My download speed went from about 80 megabits a second, 100 on a good day, to 400 within 10 minutes. It quadrupled. Nothing changed. No technology, nothing coming into the house, no new router. I was going to buy a new router. Actually, I lie. I had to go get a Cat 6 cable. Had a Cat 5 cable because for the last 5 years. Went down to Bunnings, bought a Cat 6 cable to plug into the NBN box because I thought it was a bit slow. Yeah, four times my internet speed and triple my upload speed from like 10 to 30 megabits a second. So thank you, Launtel. Giving a free plug to Launtel.
We can hear even more from you going forward.
Well, and the funny thing is, when the next time I went to use the voice thing on ChatGPT, still laggy. Yeah.
Well, it does have to go all the way to China and get parsed and then come back to Brisbane.
Well, speaking of China, Tony, we like to laugh about all of the media coverage about China's economy. All I've been hearing in the Western media for the last 6 months is how China's economy is just stuffed. No good.
Terrible. Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, yesterday in the Financial Review, oil extends run as China growth surprises. Oil ticked higher following the biggest weekly advance in a month as macroeconomic data from China came in ahead of expectations. And Ukrainian attacks on Russian refineries heightened geopolitical risks. China's factory output investment grew more strongly than expected at the start of the year, figures on Monday showed. The country is the world's largest oil importer. So there you go. I mean, I guess there will be some people that will say, well, China just makes up their numbers anyway, so it doesn't matter.
And I think there's an element of truth in that. You can't consistently keep making them up forever. But they do. I mean, the kernel of truth is the fact that China is the fastest country in the world to put out its economic stats. Like compared to Australia, I think China gets its numbers out a month after they close off the quarter or the month. The ABS takes like 3 to 6 months to get its figures out, which is an indictment on the ABS as much as it is on.
Well, it's because in China, you get shot if you don't get your figures out in a month. They take you out the back and shoot you. It's incentives. Incentives drive performance.
Incentives, yes, that's right. Yeah. But what do people expect? It's a centrally run economy. At the end of last year, they started putting stimulus into other sectors of the economy because the real estate side of things was turning down. And golly, it's worked. Why are we surprised?
Well, that, and I've banged on about this before on this and other shows, but I've read quite a number of books on the Chinese government and how they've learned from Singapore. Mm-hmm. China's been doing this for thousands of years. I mean, they're not new at figuring out how to run a big country. And then they also learned from what Lee Kuan Yew did in Singapore. This whole idea of just getting the best and smartest and brightest minds from across the country, testing them in low-ranking jobs and positions, and the ones that perform well, you give them a bigger job and a bigger job. And it sounds like how corporations supposedly operate. They just run the country like a corporation, which in the West, we often talk about that. Wouldn't that be great if we could run our government as effectively as we run a corporation? When China does it, we go, can't trust them. They're Chinese.
Well, here the corporations run the government.
It's kind of the other way around. I see. Yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
Look, I don't know. I don't know what to believe or what not to believe, but I do think, you know, they got a lot of, despite what people might think about Xi Jinping or the Communist Party or whatever, the country is lots of very bright people, and they find lots of very bright people and they put them in, okay, your job's to run this part of the economy, figure out how to make it work or else. And they do.
But yeah, look, all of that aside, I guess one of the benefits of a centrally planned economy is last year they said real estate's going to take a hit. How do we make up for it? Looks like it's factories.
Mm.
Okay, let's do whatever we can to push that sector of the economy. If we can't get 8 cylinders firing, let's get 7 cylinders firing, and you know, move the pieces around the board to achieve that. Compared to Western democracies like Australia or the US or whatever, where you know, it can take a year, 2 years for the government to enact legislation to support one particular sector over the other.
Mm.
And that's after a bruising round of media scrutiny, corporate lobbying, watering down to do deals because you don't have a majority, all that kind of stuff that goes on. It's a very, very different sort of approach.
Mm. Yeah, the book by Daniel something, the Canadian professor, his book I read, you know, he basically talks about how China tries to run its economy, its country, but the way that we talk about trying to run corporations in the West, you know, CEO makes a decision, it filters down, whips are cracked, and people get on with it. It's the way they do it. And, you know, it doesn't work necessarily 100% of the time as corporation. It doesn't work in corporations 100% of the time as well. But they also have that consistency decade after decade after decade too, because it's one vision, pretty much, since Dong Xiaoping,
and
one vision.
You know? Also, too, to put some perspective around it, the numbers came out saying the Chinese economy grew by 7.5% last month. Perhaps with the exception of India, that would have to be up there with one of the fastest growing economies in the world. But it's been number one for
decades,
15 years now.
Yeah.
So, I accept all the criticisms that people have on China on various issues, but you can't fault the management of the economy.
Well, you can, but I'm sure people do. I had a quote I was going to read here. Daniel A. Bell, China Model, is the book that I read. Looking for the quote. Yeah, this one, this will do. From Deng Xiaoping to Xi Jinping, China's leaders have repeatedly stressed the need to study aspects of Singapore's political model. Partly inspired by Singapore, China has evolved a sophisticated and comprehensive system for selecting and promoting political talent. As a result, the Chinese government has a high proportion of economists and scientists willing to experiment on the basis of trial and error, most of whom could not have been elected in a democratic context, and several hundred million Chinese have been lifted out of poverty over the past three decades. The meritocratic ideal, the idea that government officials are selected and promoted on the basis of ability and morality rather than political connections, wealth, and family background, is still a long way from the political reality in China. But if China continues to meritocratize and avoids the bad policy making stemming from voter ignorance in democratic countries, especially the United States, the powerful and populous country it is usually compared to. Oh, thank you, baby. It will set a model for others. At the moment, China is not good enough in terms of governance, and the United States is not bad enough for China's political meritocracy to exercise much soft power. But he sort of compares, you know, the two countries side by side and talks about how their economies are performing over the last 20, 30 years. And, you know, you can sort of see the divergence in the two. One's going up, the other's going down in most metrics.
I think it'll be interesting to see how India goes. I mean, it's I forget now the population difference. I think it's got a bigger population than China from memory, but a Western style democracy, and it's starting its increase in the middle class that China sort of did about 20 years ago.
Mm.
So, interesting to compare and contrast the numbers from China, where it's a different style of management compared to India going forward.
According to Reuters, India's population by the middle of last year was 1.4286 billion against 1.4257 billion for China.
Okay, so neck and neck pretty much.
Yeah, a couple of million between them. Well, speaking of China, steel. They use a lot of steel. Alex declared steel a sell on Monday. I declared it not a sell Monday afternoon.
You didn't believe her.
I did the numbers, and it was a notch, and I didn't want to have to sell BSL.
Right.
Well, I checked this morning, and it was definitely below the sell line. Yeah, so I ran the numbers through the three-point trend line calculator. Definitely a sell, sadly, this morning. So I guess China's construction industry not buying as much steel as I would like.
No, and the construction industry is a retail-based industry, I think. If not about half the steel that's used in China, maybe a little bit more goes into construction, apartment buildings and all that kind of stuff. And there's China rightfully is putting the brakes on all that stuff. So steel is going to have some issues, at least in terms of you relying on China to give it a boost.
Yeah. So anyone holding on to steel stocks, particularly BSL, you may want to think about that today. Speaking of resource stocks, I had to sell SMR out of the light portfolio this morning. It became a rule one sell. It was up 40% not that long ago. And with the coke and coal price plummeting, it went with it and, went from 40% up to a rule one sell. That was heartbreaking.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is heartbreaking. Coking coal is going to follow steel, really, isn't it?
I guess, yeah.
Coking coal is used to make steel, so they go hand in glove.
Yeah. So it's one of those instances that we all hate, where you've got a stock and people will go, should have taken my profits. But, I was going to say, we know from regression testing that it works more often than it does, at least we think it does. Speaking of which, so I've mentioned a few times, one of our young, savvy programmer listeners, Matt Walker, has been working on building a regression testing system, and I've been testing it with him over the last month or two. I ran another test for his latest iteration over the weekend, and I said to Tony off air, it only returned a 12.5% CAGR. It's going from like 2016 to the end of 2023 is the data set that we're running it on. And I thought that was bad. And I spent hours on the weekend trying to figure out why it was so bad and couldn't figure it out. Tony said, well, hold on, what was the STW's CAGR over that period? And we worked it out. It was what, 4.5%?
About 5%, just under 5.
Just under 5. So, it's like 2.5 times better than the STW. So,
triple market.
Yeah. So, I think that's, we might have a regression testing system that works.
Fantastic.
Yes. And I think we can also, I have to chat to Matt, but with some of the data sources that we have discovered recently, we can probably put a lot more data into it too, like 10, 20 years of data. Into it. The first step was just getting it working, and I think it is now. And now we can. I mean, there's a couple of things that it doesn't factor in. It doesn't factor in qualified audits. It doesn't factor in commodity sales. Although I think I can probably introduce that as well I'm trying to code the qualified audits thing at the moment. Then I'll try and code the historical commodity sells by downloading the World Bank data, which I think goes back 20 years. But anyway, we can start to play around now, I think, with some of the variables that you want to test.
Good.
So I'll get you we can send you the code, or you can give me a list of test scenarios. Because the one I ran on Saturday took 15 minutes to run. So it can pretty much run, we can run 8-year set tests in, 15, 20 minutes. It's pretty amazing. So shout out to Matt and his dad Toby, for putting that together. It's
yeah, fantastic. Thanks, guys.
Well, that's all I've got today, Tony. What have you got left to talk about?
Oh, a couple of things. So I've got an update on Dijkstra. Listeners may recall we had a friend of mine, Jan Rousseau, on the show way back in our first year, I think it was, and he talked about how he had taken the company he was executive chairman of to listing on the ASX. And now they've come full circle and they're being taken over by a company called Ideagen, which is a UK, looks like it's a UK fund for investing in software as a service companies. So I raise it because Dijkstra was on the buy list a little while ago. And if anyone had bought it then, you would have made a nice profit. I think it was on the buy list around when it was about 17 or 18 cents and the takeover price is 24. So you would have done well.
Nice. What's the share code?
DTC, Dijkstra.
DTC.
But it's going through a scheme of arrangement, which means that there'll be a vote next month. And then if the vote passes and accepts the takeover offer, then you'll get your 24 cents. Or it's been pretty much trading at 24 cents on the market now. So if you feel like it's all over, there's always a chance of another offer coming through prior to that vote. But if you want to move on, then you could sell on market now for the price that's being offered by Ideagen.
And if you're one of the people who bought it back in October 2020 when it was trading at $2.14,
yeah,
you're probably not happy. Hopefully,
yeah, it had a rocky ride. It listed at 90 cents and it's been up and down since then. It went all the way back to 10 cents and then came onto our buy list after it turned up from there at about 17 or 18 cents.
So is it time to get your friend back on to talk about that journey?
Yeah, I think he's pretty busy at the moment, but maybe in a month or two, sure.
Yeah.
He can tell us how he's going to spend his windfall.
He's got a windfall?
Yeah, well, he owns, I forget now how much, 10% of the company, something like that.
Right.
Hmm. A lot less than when it was $2, but he gets out with something.
Nice. Well, congratulations to everyone that's holding that.
Yeah. And the last thing I've got to go through today is a pulled pork. We had a request last week for an update on Mitchell Services.
Which we haven't done since 2019, yeah.
Right. So I did the pulled pork back in 2019. Actually, I haven't checked the share price since. Do you have a date for when that was done?
Yeah, I mentioned it last week. Let me see. MSV. Oh, well. No, I don't. It's in my email somewhere.
Anyway. I'll put in 19th of March 2019. See what the price was. See how the curse of the pulled pork went since last time?
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. Well, it's gone down. So back then it was at 58 cents and today's at 36 cents.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Not good. Yeah, hold on. It was May, 7th of May 2019.
Okay. And, 63, so about the same.
Wow.
Yep.
2019.
So it's been dropping, but
I'm not sure. Yep. I'm not sure back then we said it was a buy. That was back in the days when we were just trying to I was still building my checklist and we were trying to analyze stocks so I could understand what the numbers meant. So I'm not sure what conclusion we came to at the end of that.
Yeah, I've got to say that I don't do pulled porks as necessarily recommendations on stocks. I just do them to show how I analyze companies.
Well, do them when they're on the buy list usually these days. Back then, we didn't have a buy list. So we would just do them and see what happened, I think, back then.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, this Mitchell Services is not on the buy list. It has been at various times. And it may well be because it's scoring well from a QAV perspective. It just has recent sentiment to overcome to get back on the buy list. And I should point out it's trading at, I did my analysis at 36 cents and it's trading at that today. And that's the right on the sell line. The sell price is 36 cents. However, the buy price is only 39 cents. And as each month ticks forward, the buy line and the sell line are getting very close to converging. And so people who follow charts and chartists and technical analysis analysts would say that that's a triangle formation where the buy line and the sell line come close together. And it can only mean one thing, that it's, if the share price is either going to break up or break down above the buy line or below the sell line. And if you believe the charters, they say that's usually the start of a new trend. So we'll see which way it goes. With the QAV score where it is, I'm hoping, or not, doesn't worry me either way, I shouldn't say I'm hoping. I think it might go up, but that's speculation, and I can't be 100% sure of that. But anyway, I'll go through it. We've had a request last week to talk about it. I also should say it's a small ADT company. It's only 63,000 traded per day on average, so it's not for everyone. To give some background on Mitchell Services, it's a drilling company started in Queensland back in 1969 by Peter Mitchell. He had worked in the industry as a salesman and then decided to go off on his own, bought a truck and started drilling bores for Kingaroy peanut farmers, and then decided that wasn't working by 1971 because every time it rained, they would cancel their bore contracts. And so he moved into the mining sector and got a contract west of Nebo. And that was to the mining exploration company, T.S. Peabody Mitsui. A couple of those names are still around in Queensland today. And moved on from there. So it's actually, I recommend people go to their website and have a look at the company history, because it's a lot of fun. In the early days, they were a bit of a cowboy outfit and did some interesting things. Like in 1972, Peter Mitchell was contracted for 4 months to drill for uranium in Arnhem Land, where he said it was very hard to find crew. And he developed the motto, "If it can't be done, we'll do it." And he drilled for uranium in Arnhem Land and got out 36 hours prior to Cyclone Tracy hitting Darwin in 1974. They've had a bit of a wild ride at the start. Lots of fun. There's a few poems about bribing Indonesian customs officers when they were trying to get rigs into Indonesia to fulfill contracts, stories like that. After about 25 years of building their equipment base, their drilling base, because this is a drill rig company, I should say. They hire out drills to mining sites in the main. But they currently work in Australia. They've worked all overseas, though, and they worked in PNG in Indonesia. So 25 years in, so that must be about, what would that be, 95? Nathan Mitchell, the son, takes over as CEO. And a couple of years later, it seems like, I couldn't get this straight in the history of the company. It seems like they sold the Australian business to a company called AJ Lucas for $150 million. And the parents took their money and retired to the Gold Coast, and Nathan took over. And it looks like he went overseas, basically because they helped pioneer the coal seam gas boom, which was a big thing in Queensland back in the 90s. They had a special extraction method, which they took overseas to the US and China and Africa, Zambia, Mozambique, as well as Russia, Botswana. Then it looks like he came back into Australia. And by 2013, they did a reverse merger and listed Mitchell Services again on the ASX. They were acquired by a company called Drill Talk, which was already listed, but in reality, it was a reverse merger, and then Mitchell Services took over and became MSV, the listed company. A chap by the name of Andrew Elf was appointed CEO in 2014, and through various acquisitions, they grew the size of the rigs that they have. They began underground operations, including automated drilling underground. They developed a company called Radco to pioneer that underground drilling part of their business. And 2019 acquired another company called Deepcore Drilling. So basically grown through, I guess, a bit of a boom through the coal seam gas explosion in Queensland. And if people can remember back that far, there was it was a big boom in that sector of the energy sector back then. They're now, they were listed, they were bought out, or they sold to AJ Lucas. They're back. They're online. They're on the boards again. What else can I say about them? Not a whole lot. I think the thing to turn to now is their latest results, and it seems like they were indebted, which I'm guessing was partly due to COVID and partly due to the acquisitions they've been making. But in the last year or so, they've been able to throw off lots of cash and pay down large amounts of debt. So their debt's basically halved in the last 12 months. And that's a testament to how much cash they're throwing off, and also, I guess, to good management. But it's allowing them to undertake a share buyback and also to start paying dividends. So lots of money flowing into this company from its operations. And that suggests to me that if that continues anyway, they'll be in, they'll either be acquired themselves, or the share price will be discovered and it'll take off, because the numbers on this company are quite good. I'll go through them now. The price I'm using is 36 cents. That's only 64% of the consensus target on this this company. So we often see companies trade below consensus target. In fact, the majority of them do, because brokers want the transaction business. But to see someone trading at 64% is unusual. 36 cents, which is the share price, is just above IV1 of 27 cents and below IV2 of 48 cents. The yield on this company is 11.3%. So a huge amount of money is coming in and going back out to repay the shareholders. And this is one of these companies where the yield is greater than the PE, which is, I think, a real shorthand indicator of value to me. Stock Doctor Financial Health is strong and steady, so it scores well for that. I should say, sorry, the PE is just under 7x, which scores as a record low for the last 3 years, and it's 6.95, which is less than the yield of 11.33. So I like that. The other thing to say, of course, is that this has been a family operated company for a long time, and the directors are still holding 30%. Nathan Mitchell is still the chairman of the company and still involved on the board. So we give it a score for being an owner-founder. Yeah, I guess Nathan isn't the founder, his father was, but he's certainly spent a long time running the business and working in the business and knows a lot about it. PropCAF, this is where the fund comes in. PropCAF is 23 cents per share. Operating cash flow is 23 cents per share. Share price is 36. So PropCAF is 1.57x for this company, which is amazing. It's amazing you can buy a company like this on stock market where you get your money back in 18 months in terms of the cash flowing out. It's trading below book plus 30. So net equity per share is 31 cents. Book plus 30 is 40 cents, and the share price is 36. So you can buy it for a very reasonable price in terms of the assets it holds. What else can I say? That's probably it. Quality score for this company, then, if I add it all up, is 11 out of 16 or 69%. And the QAV score is 0.44.
Whoa. So
it's going to score well on the buy list. It just needs to get above that 39 cent buy price, and it's only 3 cents off it. Certainly one to look at, and one to you could have a look at buying it now, I guess, or you could wait for sentiment to confirm. Interesting sort of industry I should comment on. Pros and cons. Might start with the cons first because they're shorter. The Mitchell Services called out in the last little while, a year or so ago, that they were affected by bad weather. And so certainly the above ground drilling can be affected by bad weather. So it's weather dependent, which is an issue. And one thing I did call out when I did this company last time is that in this kind of sector where you're loaning out or you're hiring out drilling rigs, utilization rates are important. And I was kind of interested that they make commentary on the fact that they have high utilization rates, but they don't actually, in any of the work I saw, the presentations I went through, I couldn't see their utilization rates. So I thought that was a little bit interesting. But this is a business where when a downturn comes, it can come hard, because as it probably did during COVID, which is why they have had debt, which they're paying off, one of the reasons anyway. But yeah, you don't want to be stranded owning lots of rigs if there's a downturn in the mining sector. Having said that, the pros are that, as they call out, the commodity prices are relatively high, and that drives demand in the mining sector to keep drilling, to expand mines. Inflationary pressure is easing, which is again their commentary, which will help their margins. They have almost, they're calling out 40% exposure to the gold sector. And as we know from other companies we've looked at, the gold price is high, if not getting close to a record high. So lots of exploration going on in the gold sector. And they have no exposure to lithium or nickel, which are the two minerals which are in the doghouse at the moment. So that bodes well for them. I think the fact they're doing a share buyback will underpin the share price. It's a record high operating cash flow, which is good and through good management. Debt's halved, as I said, which is not just a good thing, but it's reducing their financing costs, which improves margins. And I just wanted to call out the last thing. I did mention before they're a possible takeover target, but this sector in the last year or two, since we've been looking at it on this show, has had a lot of consolidation. And I'm thinking back to three companies that were on our buy list in the past. One was Swick, which was a drilling company, which was taken over by DDH1. I think the DD in DDH1 stands for Diamond Drilling. And then DDH1 last year was taken over by Perenti. So there's three acquisitions in this sector in the last year or so. And Mitchell Services, with all this cash generation, you have to think was on the radar of a larger drilling company. But who knows? So thanks for calling it out. I think it's looks like a ripper of a company. And if we can just perhaps rise 2 or 3 cents a share, it'll be a buy on our buy list fairly soon.
Thank you, Tony. I pulled up the transcript from that episode back in May 19. Episode 10, it was. Episode 10. We sort of did line-by-line analysis, comparing your numbers in Stock Doctor to the numbers I was getting from Yahoo Finance or wherever. The old painful days of me trying to manually build a thing. We ended up, the reason we did it was you said it had just turned up on the AFR's 52-week high list, a new 52-week high, and you thought that was a good reason to have a look at it. We ended up giving it a score of 0.07 in May of 2019. Okay. So we said wouldn't be a buy for us at that particular point in time. Share price was a bit too high. And so there you go. And now share price is a little bit too low.
But the score is good.
Always the bridesmaid, never the bride, MSV. but I think I have bought and sold it a few times.
Yeah, it's been on the buy list for a while.
Well, RBA still hasn't published anything, so that's it. And that's the end of the free episode of QAV for this week. If you're a new listener, I just should let you know how this works. So we have a free episode every week, runs for about half an hour. We have a premium episode also every week. It goes for another 30 to 60 minutes, depending on how many questions we get. It's where Tony answers questions from our club members. If you want to check out the premium episodes and all the other benefits of being a QAV club member, which is access to the checklist and the Bible and the private Facebook groups and the other comms channels that we have, invites to the dinners, Zoom calls, etc., etc., just sign up for the 2-week free trial and check out all that stuff out. You can do that at qavpodcast.com.au. Look for the free trial button there. And if you like the idea of value investing QAV style, but don't feel like you have the time or resources to learn how to do QAV for yourself, think about signing up for QAV Lite. That's our relatively new service where we send you the stock tips every week. And then we also monitor those stocks in a portfolio. And if they become a sell, we email our QAV Lite members and tell them that it's time to sell that stock and what to replace it with. Check that out too. It's sort of a low effort way of doing QAV. Still better if you know how to do it yourself, I think, because Tony could get hit by a bus and then where are you? But while he's not, we can do this. So check that out, qavpodcast.com.au/light, L-I-G-H-T. If you don't want to sign up to any of those, just keep listening to the free episode. And if you have any questions, shoot me an email. You'll find that on our website too. All right, have a great week and good luck with your investing. The QAV podcast is a production of Spacecraft Publishing Proprietary Limited, authorised representative of AFSL 520442, AFS representative number 001292718. Please don't make any investment decisions based solely on listening to this podcast. This is presented as general advice only, not personal financial advice. We don't know your personal financial circumstances. Please see a financial planner before making any investing decisions. We'll